the gag who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gag.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who are wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Today myself, Jay and Buster, will look back on the 5-1 victory over Queen's Park in the Betfred League Cup. We'll look back on some of the pre-season fixtures, discuss players departing for Park, and we'll see what else catches our attention over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
How are you doing?
Well, we'll start with yesterday's game, and Jay, I suppose Stephen Robinson summed it up best for me. It was a pretty poor first half. The players looked to be struggling to find their feet, but changing up a few things at half time, a few players introduced in the second half certainly made an impact as well. And it ended up being a very satisfying afternoon and what was a good result as well.
Aye, I think that sums it up. You know, although it was the first competitive game, we need to obviously recognise that it's still something of a friendly in terms of fitness, in terms of the amount of new players we've got, them bedding in, getting used to playing in the team. So I think that although the first half was a bit dire and a bit dull and we didn't do a great deal, I think that you need to expect that this early on. That said, you know, the actual goal we did score in the first half was a really well worked goal. It was a fantastic you know, chest into Cadden's path from Alex Fisher. So, you know, at half time, one each, what the goal we conceded was really poor, poor defending, something we've kind of became used to over last season, and something that you hope that we'll, you know, start to eradicate from our game as this season goes on. But yeah, second half was completely different. We looked a lot more energetic, a lot more creative, and we went on to create another four really, really good goals. That was one thing that I don't think I really picked up on as much at the game, but looking back at the highlights this morning, every one of our goals were really, really top class goals. You know, the first one, as I said, it's a fantastic assist from Alex Fisher. The second goal is a great 1-2 between Tanner and Big Ariana, or whatever his name is. And then, you know, the two Bowman goals, both are fantastic balls through to him. He times his run brilliantly. It's a great first touch for both, and then fantastic finishes, particularly the second one. And then, of course, Lou Moult's free kick was unstoppable. So, you know, not only have we went and won a game that we were expected to win and won it comfortably, but we've scored five fantastic goals in the process. And so it was a really enjoyable afternoon.
Buster, the players grabbing the headlines, I suppose, will be the two players that appeared as substitutes. Ryan Bowman came on and took both his goals fantastically well. He's scored a lot of goals in pre-season. And I think in the past we've discussed Bowman and said that we believed there was a player in there, and perhaps he just needed a few goals to get himself up and running and to kind of boost his confidence. And that seems to have been the case. He was got onto both through balls, evaded the offside trap, put them away really nicely.
Yeah, as you says, we've said, you know, we think if he gets a chance, you know, he's got to grasp it with both hands basically and go for it. And you know, it's pre-season, as you know, as Jay says, even the League Cup here, it's very early on in the summer, so it's partially part of the pre-season as well. But as you says, you know, Bowman's doing what you want him to do, putting the ball in the net, basically. As Jay says, two fantastic runs, two fantastic touches, and, you know, as Jay says, the second one was a great finish. He's I think he, you know, if he's given a chance, he could come really good, maybe be a 10, 15 goals a season sort of guy, and he can't really knock that. He never really would have got a chance last year behind Moult and McDonald, so, you know, depending on what happens with our forwards, you know, from now to the end of the window, I think he could play a big part for us this year.
And that's another element to it, isn't it? The talk before the game, yeah. Linking Louis Moult with moves elsewhere. Didn't really expect him to play yesterday or feature at all, but he's come on, scored a sublime free kick. And again, that won't escape the attention of potential suitors. So you kind of think that it's nice to see Bowman step up and offer, well, not a like-for-like replacement for Moult, but potentially could go in there and fill some of that void.
Yep, he's, as you say, he's no like-for-like, but if he's going to be the one who has to put the ball in the net, then fair enough. And, you know, I didn't see much of the pre-season, as we're aware, but if he's going to be the one that pokes it in the goals, he deserves a chance, I suppose. And, as you said, it's all down to the questions of whether or not Louis Moult's still here come September.
Jay, there's been a lot of change over the summer months, sorry, and I think five starting debutants in the team yesterday, and I think all could be pretty satisfied with their afternoon. There was a few moments where I think each individual impressed me quite a lot. It shows that these guys have been brought to the club and they're going to play a big part, and it looks like they have gelled. Admittedly, I didn't go to one pre-season game, but it looks like they've gelled pretty quickly and they look to be finding their feet and have blended in with the guys that have been here for certain periods of time.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of even off the park, a lot of the interviews that you see with players, with Robinson, just over pre-season, all of them, you know, see, I know it's maybe par for the course that, you know, you obviously talk up the new guys coming in and things like that, but there would seem to be a lot of emphasis on, you know, the players' characters and you know, just how well they've settled in and how well they're getting on with everybody else. You know, Louis Moult said it, you know, Robinson said it, but the new guys themselves and their interviews have talked about how well they've got on with the guys already at the club. So that's only a positive, because, you know, not only does it mean you've got a decent team spirit to build on, it also means that hopefully it won't take them quite as long to settle in as maybe it would have if, you know, there wasn't that kind of rapport early on. In terms of on the park, yeah, I think all five that started on Saturday, and, you know, the guys who obviously didn't start but have played in pre-season, like Charles Dunn, for example, I think have at least shown that, you know, they've got something to offer. The five yesterday, I thought Carson, you know, he obviously had quite a quiet game, but he pulled off a fantastic save in the second half. He had a couple of crosses to come for that he looked, you know, strong and comfortable with, something that we've obviously not had from a goalkeeper for a couple of years.
I think that's something that caught my attention. His distribution was very good, which, again, I think that's been a bit of a problem in maybe the last season with Samson, and then I don't think Griffiths was too confident with the ball at his feet either.
Yeah, I mean, I think from particularly the Livingston friendly, and in flashes yesterday as well, I think that the idea that Robinson, you know, likes a long ball game, I know that was kind of a worry because we finished last season playing the long ball, but I think there's enough that I'm seeing to suggest that was just a kind of needs must at the end of last season. I think we are trying to get the ball down, we are trying to, you know, go down the wings, that seems to be, you know, go down the channel seems to be a big part of Robinson's game plan. But, you know, if you have a goalkeeper that can obviously distribute for the back, then, you know, that's ideal. When you look at, you know, both Bowman's goals, although McHugh was playing defensive mid, he was, you know, he was sitting quite far back when he played that through ball. I think, you know, was it Hamo or Cedric or whoever it was that played the ball through for the second goal? So the second goal came from the back line. And, you know, those weren't, it was still, you could argue that both the Bowman goals came from, you know, a long ball forward, but it was a, you know, a targeted, well executed ball through to Bowman. It wasn't, you know, the mindless punt from Ben Hennigan that we've seen, you know, at the end of last season. So even when we are going long, it seems to be done, you know, effectively well, but done in a very kind of efficient, targeted way. I thought Cedric looks, you know, half decent. I've still not seen enough of him yet to make a massive judgment, but I think he's shown that he's comfortable with the ball at his feet. He hasn't really been tested as much from what I've seen. Obviously, I wasn't at Gateshead, I wasn't at Barrow, so I can't really comment, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he would fare in, for example, the first game of the season against a team like Rangers. You know, Tanner, I think, is a really positive player, you know, really full of energy. I think he'll be a really big asset. Obviously, you know, we've spoke about Biggie before in the podcast about how, you know, he came with, it was seen as a bit of a coup, and I've been impressed with him and McHugh, both in that kind of holding midfield role. I think that's something that we can really be looking forward to seeing next season. And they seem to have actually bedded in well together already. You know, first League Cup game, and I thought they looked really, really comfortable alongside each other. And even Alex Fisher, who, you know, I think is one of those players that maybe just needs a goal to get him going, but I've been quite impressed by his all-round game, and that when we, I didn't know too much about him when we signed him, other than, you know, he'd obviously scored a decent number of goals at the end of last season, but I thought we were signing a big target man, and yet, you know, he's got a lot of movement, he's got, you know, a bit of pace, he's big, he's athletic, and, you know, as I said, his assist for Cadden's goal was top class. So I think there's a lot to be positive about. You don't want to get too carried away. It's Queen's Park, no disrespect to them, but it's a game we should be winning, and winning comfortably. But to go there and do it in the manner we did in the second half, I think you've got to be really pleased, particularly because, you know, the new guys, you know, to a man, pretty much played a big, big role in it.
Plus, I wouldn't be a Motherwell podcast if we didn't then look for a few negatives, and I'm still not quite convinced by the what appeared to be the back three yesterday. Didn't seem to be completely comfortable with it, with guys like Richard Tate bombing forward and being encouraged to bomb forward, quite often getting caught out and behind. Is that something you would like to see changed up? Do you think we've got the personnel just now to be able to change that up?
I'm not too sure, really. As I say, I've not seen much of, you know, like Kripke and, or, you know, Cedric, whatever his name is. You know, I've not seen really too much of them, but as you say, it's not something I'm too fond of myself. Yesterday, I don't think Richard Tate done very much defensively at all. No, that's not me being critical of him. It's just that, as you say, he was bombing forward and he was going for it. And at any time the ball sort of came in behind, you know, Cedric was in there to sort of come across and fill in. And when we were on the ball, I thought the three at the back worked brilliantly, to be honest with you. Cedric, again, looks very good in the ball. I actually kind of like Stevie Hamill in that sort of left centre-half role as well, because, again, when he has to go out and fill it in at left-back, you know, it sort of suits him a wee bit as well, considering, you know, he's his age and he's getting on a wee bit. You don't really want to see him be playing the wing-back role. I think it holds Elliot Freer back a bit. You know, he's coming from a lot deeper than he would be when he's, you know, going to the byline, basically. He'd be coming through a lot deeper than if he was just playing straight at left mid or left wing or something. But, again, we'll have to see if that's... It does look like that's how we're going to set up, I think. But we'll have to see how it goes, you know, maybe into the next few games in the League Cup. We'll see how we set up against Rangers coming the start of the season. You never know, we might change it up for the next couple of games, try something different. As I say, these games, although they're competitive, they are games we should be winning, and it's maybe a time where in a competitive game, you can sort of have a wee bit of a gamble with your system and see what works best. It's not something I particularly fancy, but if it's just a matter of, you know, the personnel getting used to it and it's playing like that, then if it works out, brilliant. But I don't know, it's one of the things we're just going to have to wait and see what happens with it.
We'll go on and look at the Morton game in just a second, but another thing on yesterday's game, and as I said, for a couple of reasons I've not been to any of the pre-season games, but the games that I could have actually made, I didn't make any attempt to go to, and it was basically on the back of the fact that I just feel like I've seen too many friendlies for my liking, and the amount of substitutions to the game, I just kind of had to watch.
Betfred League Cup games have really improved pre-season for me. Like, the much higher tempo. Yeah, there is a hint of a friendly match about them, I must confess, but possibly for the players that's not the case. It's a much more enjoyable game to attend than a pre-season friendly. I certainly think that the revamp of this competition, Jay, has caught the imagination, and there's a decent travelling support yesterday as well, considering the pair weekend in July as well. So there certainly is positives to this revamp and changes that have been implemented, which isn't often said in Scottish football, it must be said.
Yeah, I mean, I still, you know, the whole penalty shootout for a bonus point and things like that, I still think it's a bit laughable, and there's no really any need for it whatsoever. But as a competition, yeah, I tend to agree. I think that it does, you say there about too many pre-season friendlies, and that can often be the case, you know, when you're kind of just churning out friendly match after friendly match over pre-season, counting down the days to competitive football. And I suppose the group stage of the League Cup is a combination of both. You still get, you know, that kind of semi-friendly feeling of the game. You know that things might be tried in the games, or players might be played to get their fitness up and things like that. It's not, you know, teams going out at this stage in the campaign to make sure that they're going to win every game and try and win the trophy. I think it's seen as a pre-season competition. That has all the benefits of pre-season friendlies, but yep, with the added incentive that it is a domestic cup competition, and you know, although the League Cup obviously pales massively in significance to the Scottish Cup, I'm sure every Motherwell fan would be over the moon if we somehow managed to win the League Cup. So you know, it's still a big tournament, and it might feel like a pre-season friendly, and it might be very early on in the competition, but it is still a League Cup game. It's still an important victory. If we want to top the group and go through into the next round, then you'd need to be going to Queen's Park and winning 5-1. So, you know, I don't want to understate the fact that it is still an important game, and it's still an important result in a cup competition. But yeah, I tend to agree. I'm planning on going to all the League Cup games. If it wasn't the League Cup, then if it was just friendlies, I wouldn't be going to them all. So already, you know, there is the added incentive to go along and to see it, because you know it's competitive football. You know there's the cup aspect to it. Yes, there's some added nonsense like the bonus point and things like that, but no, I tend to agree. I think they've miraculously managed to do something right for a change, and that's not something that the SFA or SPFL tend to do very often.
I think we mentioned this, you know, last year as well, once it was sort of done or even halfway through it. It is a welcome change to the friendlies, and it, you know, as I've already sort of referred to these games as like friendlies a couple of times, and I don't mean that in any sort of disrespect to the competition or the opponents or anything, but, you know, it is sort of that feel to it, and as I say, the competitive nature makes you want to go, it makes you want to win the game. So I think it's sort of like the right sense of a pre-season friendly. You know, you have to get things right, but you also want to win it in the same way you want to win a competitive game anyway. So I think it's a good thing, and again, just to reiterate what Jay says there, you want to go to these games, whereas if it's a friendly game, you know you'd rather do something else maybe.
Well, we'll look at the Morton game just now then, and bust up with the first game back at Turf Park. All the pre-season friendlies were all played away from home, and then obviously at Hampden yesterday, so a welcome return back to home action. Morton are the second seeds in the group, had a good season in the Championship last season. Jim Duffy's enjoyed a real successful period in charge of Morton, so certainly a tough test, and it'll be one that I think the players will be really looking forward to as well, after getting off to such a strong start yesterday.
Yeah, again, it'll be good to go back to Fir Park for the FIPA, and as you say, it's midsummer, so hopefully the weather will be good for it as well. But I don't know much about Morton or them, or what I've seen of them last year. I'm not really too sure of, you know, how good they actually were. I've seen them a couple of times maybe on the telly as they progressed through the, you know, through the rounds of the cups, but I seen they won, I think it was 1-0 at the weekend against was it Berwick?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I seen that, that they won there. So, you know, as you say, they're a second seeds. They should, on paper, be the hardest game of the group. But it doesn't always really work out like that. But I'm sure they'll be up for it, and I'm sure you know, they'll give us a hard game. But I think they've got a couple of pretty semi-decent players as well in there. There's Bob McHugh, no, actually play for him, and I'm saying semi-decent then, Bob McHugh, but I think Bob McHugh signed for them. Look at the wee guy Katongo, and I'm sure somebody for Dundee or something like that during the summer as well, but I kind of think who I'm thinking of, sorry.
There is also a firm favourite of yours making his third part return as well.
Mr Forbes?
Yes.
I forgot about him, actually. I think it's, I actually just looked him up there as I was talking. Gary Harkins have signed as well, who, if, you know, any time I've seen him on telly, he looked rubbish and lazy, but then when he played with whoever he played with against us at Firth Park, he seemed to run the show. So, you know, that'll be an interesting one to see him as well. But, you know, as I say, they've got a couple of players in there we know, so it could be a lot harder than I'm thinking it might be.
Yeah, it's a hard one to gauge, of course it is, but the importance of the 3 points against the rivals to that top spot are imperative, I suppose, because just like ourselves, Morton will be expected to beat Edinburgh City, they'll be expected to beat Queen's Park, so it's a wee bit of a kind of playoff, if you will.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very tough game. I think Morton, you know, showed last season that, you know, they're a decent footballing side. Obviously, I don't know, you know, exactly how the squad's fared over the summer, who's left, who's came in and things like that, so I can't really comment too much. But, you know, let's not forget that Jim Duffy is a name that was being touted as a potential Motherwell manager when Mark McGee left. So, you know, they've got a good manager, they've got a good squad. You know, we've already said that, yeah, as much as it was positive yesterday, there's still players on our side who are settling in and gelling. So it will be a difficult game, but it'll be good to get back to Firth Park. You've obviously got, you know, the pitch has been reseeded or whatever it was, and it was the best playing surface in Scotland last season. I expect it will be again this season. You've got obviously the new East Stand roof, you've got the new warm up areas behind the goal, so it'll be quite good just to get back to Firth Park and you know, get back into being in the East Stand and just seeing how the actual stadium itself shaping up. But no, I think it'll be a very tough game. I don't think you know, a win or a positive result for us is a foregone conclusion by any means. I wouldn't be surprised if Morton can come to Motherwell and get a win. I think they're more than capable of doing so, but I'd like to think that if we, you know, play the way we did in the second half on Saturday, are as positive as we were and create as many chances and take the chances, which I think was the big thing yesterday. You know, we weren't just creating chances, we were taking them clinically, and if we can do that again against Morton, then I would like to think we'll be too strong for them. But you're right, I mean, if we can get a win on Saturday, then you can go into those last two games not taking the eye off the ball, but you can then maybe relax a little bit, maybe treat them a wee bit more like friendlies, give someone a start that perhaps you wouldn't have if you hadn't won the first two games, and maybe, you know, allow whoever, you know, maybe a change of system, or allow, you know, Bowman to start the game, or whatever it is, you know, whatever Robinson wants to try and do. You know, if you've got two wins on the board, including against the second seeds in the group, then you can get into those last two games, particularly against Edinburgh City, no disrespect to them, but if you can go to Edinburgh City and treat that a little bit more like a friendly rather than a vital cup group stage game, then that'd be ideal. So yeah, it'll be a very difficult game, but it's one I would like to think that we can take the win from. And hopefully we just avoid any penalty shootouts during this tournament, because I can't stand that part.
I know we often say that football fans are a pretty fickle bunch, but the team being booed off the park at half-time yesterday was slightly disappointing. I know that we're up against amateur opposition. I know it wasn't a fantastic first-half performance, but how important is it that, given that we've emphasised there is new guys in the squad, they're just gelling in, but the fans do remain patient. There's going to be a massive start where I think it's six of the first eight Premiership fixtures are all at home, so we're going to need to hit the ground running in the league, but the fans really need to stick with the guys during these League Cup fixtures, don't they, and let them settle in, let them make their mistakes, hopefully when it doesn't matter quite as much as it does in the league.
Yeah, I mean, there's a culture, and I would imagine all football teams, not just Motherwell, we notice it because we're Motherwell fans, but there is a culture that, You know, new guys come in, one or two will be identified early on as, you know, the kind of guys that people will just nail their cars to the mast and decide that they're not good enough, you know, whoever it may be, right, that guy's not good enough, and then they'll wait until there's a couple of mistakes so that they can then go, oh, I told you, and then that guy becomes, you know, target number one. For example, if Alex Fisher, you know, goes another few weeks without scoring, there will be voices saying, oh, he's not good enough, he's this, he's that. That's just the way it happens. Of course, there's emphasis on those guys, though. If they go there and do their job, score goals or defend or whatever it is they're there to do, then it makes it harder for fans to get on their backs. You know, let's not just put all the blame on, you know, fickle football fans. Footballers are being paid to do a job, and if they do it properly, then it lessens the opportunity for the fickle fans to get on their back. But yeah, it's always an issue, it's always a danger. But then again, you know, at the moment, I think we've got, although I don't expect we'll ever see him in a Motherwell shirt again, you have public enemy number one, Jacob Blyth now, so maybe that will be, you know, he'll be taking all the flack away from any potential new signings, so we'll see how it works. But again, yeah, I think that always happens. There's always the danger that fickle football fans are going to pick their scapegoats or their boo-boy targets for the season ahead, and it is, you know, it can be counterproductive, it can be frustrating, but on the flip side, if the players are doing the, you know, the job on the park, then, you know, they don't really have much to go on.
Yeah, we've gone in, you mentioned Jacob Blyth there, but we've gone in and talk about Dom Thomas, who left the club at the back end of last week to join Kilmarnock. This is a guy that has got quite a lot of coverage in the podcast over the last 18 months or so without really doing anything on the park to merit so much airtime, I suppose. Initially, I think we all had high hopes for him. The first ever podcast player of the year in the season, where we awarded it to an under-20s player rather than a first team player. Since then, I don't know whether the podcast award was the curse or the starting point of his downfall, because it certainly didn't happen for him following that. They moved to Kilmarnock. I think the club have got a sell-on clause there, but they have moved him on with no fee involved, knowing that he won't be playing a part, or he wouldn't be playing a part at Firth Park during the upcoming season. But there's a lot of chat. I know that we've all followed his posts on Twitter and so on, and it's hard to judge a 21-year-old or a 22-year-old and their social media output when you're quite young, naive and immature, but it is disappointing to look back in Thomas's potential and the fact that it didn't work out at all, and he didn't make his breakthrough in the way that the likes of Chris Cadden or even guys like Ben Hall, who were given an opportunity and managed to take it.
The first thing, as you say, I think it's very disappointing, considering how well he played in the under-20s and how you know, how talked up he was getting, yeah. In regards to, you know, his off-the-field activity or whatever, you know, on social media or whatever, I can't really comment on that because I'm an idiot and all. So it's you know, he's in the public eye, basically. People are interested in what he has to say. So if he was saying something that didn't go down well, you know, it got picked up on, basically. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, when he first broke through, and you know, I think I've been shouting it for ages, he should have went on loan at that point. He was unfortunate enough to be at that time on the fringe of the team, getting 5-10 minutes here and there, you know, mainly hoping he could come on and do something when effectively the team was shite or getting beat or whatever, you know, and putting it on his back. But the bottom line is, you know, he was in that position for maybe what, 18 months, as you says, and he effectively done absolutely nothing. You know, there was 100%, you know, he was 100% of the time he came on, he done basically nothing. Whether or not we maybe just hyped him up too much or had too high hopes for him, but as I say, the end of the day is, he was told this season, from what we heard Steve Robinson say, that, you know, he's want him to go on loan, and he said, I want to leave, basically. So, well, that's fine, let him go. But what you read in the papers and obviously on the club's social media and stuff, there's a semi-decent sale on feeder, so if he goes on to be the half the player we thought he could be, you know, he might be earn us a wee bit going forward. But disappointing that you know, disappointing that he couldn't pick up any of the sort of potential he had with ourselves, but it wasn't working out, so you know, it's maybe best for both parties there, isn't it?
Just on the way he left, Jay, it was quite disappointing as well to see almost arrogance. You normally see a guy leave the club, and even if it is the case, like thinking back to even guys like Dean Brill last season, who came in as a number two goalkeeper, didn't get an opportunity in the first team whatsoever, moved on in the January window. He was still very thankful for the opportunity to come in at Fir Park, and the fact, almost like a nod to the fact that the club had paid his wages for the duration of his time there. For Dom, a guy that's come through the youth system, won the Youth Cup, you would think he would at least acknowledge the football club and the support they've given him in his development. They have given him the chance to play in the top flight of Scottish football. It seems a bit arrogant that he's left without even acknowledging that in public, at least.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, you know. It's not something I think is a huge deal, but is it arrogance? Is it maybe just, you know, I don't know Dom personally, but from a lot of his tweets that would then be deleted, perhaps presumably because someone would have a word with him, you know, he perhaps isn't the brightest, you know, the brightest going, so it could just be thoughtlessness. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be arrogance, it might just be that it never even occurred to him to do something like that. I mean, who knows, it's not something I think is a particularly big deal. I'm quite happy that he's away, you know, just simply because, you know, I tended to spend most of the last year forgetting that he was even a Motherwell player. I know that he's got a bit of talent with the ball at his feet. He's tricky. He can, you know, take folk on. But nowadays in modern football, it takes so much more than that to make it at the top level and the top flight in Scottish football. You know, there's guys who play sevens on a Thursday night that can do that. It doesn't make them, you know, Scottish Premier League footballers, and I think that's what's happened with Dom. You know, he looks like an exciting player on the ball, but he just can't cut it. I think back to that East Stirling game in the League Cup last year when he was given his chance to start and was just so mediocre. He struggled against a Lowland League side, and I'm not suggesting that one game, you know, is make or break for him, but that, you know, he's been here 4 years and he's flattered to deceive any time he's come onto the park. And at the same time, as you've mentioned, you've got Cadden, you had Ben Hall, you've got, you know, Campbell, you've got Shea Gordon coming into the team. So the pathway is there if you're good enough, and Dom Thomas unfortunately just isn't. That said, he's a young Scottish footballer, and you want to see young Scottish footballers do well. So, you know, if he goes to Kilmarnock and that, you know, he fits in there and he manages to carve out a good career for himself, then great. And if we get, you know, a chunk of any sell-on fee out of it, then it's a great bit of business by Motherwell. But I think it's the right decision. Dom wanted to leave. There was no place for him at Fir Park. He's not shown himself good enough to play in the first team when a lot of the guys who, you know, perhaps were in his shadow in the under-20s have now, you know, left the Dom Thomas shadow, stepped up into the first team, and now, you know, are our first team squad members, and Dom Thomas has been left behind. So, you know, I think it's a good bit of business by the club. It basically covers us that if he goes and, you know, doesn't become, you know, doesn't realise the potential that he might have, then, you know, it doesn't make any difference. He's no longer our player. But if he does and Kilmarnock get a fee for him, then we get a wee chunk of that. So I think it's a great bit of business by Motherwell, to be honest.
Another player that perhaps could be leaving the club, a player that is attracting the headlines for the wrong reasons, is Jacob Blythe, who's been pictured on holiday with his celebrity, can we call her, girlfriend, appearing to inhale something out of a balloon. there's all sorts of puns coming to my head here, but I'll not waste my time on it too much. To be honest, it seems like a bit of a storm in a teacup. It tells you all you need to know about the Sun newspaper that this made the front page today. But for me, Buster, it might be the excuse that we need to move Blythe on, a player that's been plagued by injuries, doesn't seem particularly interested. To be perfectly honest, he seems like the kind of guy that is happy to call himself a professional footballer. He's got no interest in really representing the football club or in any way or acting in a professional manner. If we could get this guy off the books, it would maybe be more money to pay happy to loan Moult's new contract or to get another body in that might be a bit more interested, but this guy just seems to be taking up a space, to be perfectly honest.
I see, to be fair, I think, you know, you've been a bit harsh on him there because you don't really know much about him. Fair dues is inhaling the laughing gas or whatever. You know, it's not very professional. But it's, again, as you said, it is more a bit of a storm in a teacup. I think everybody, you know, just because his injuries and, you know, the return for the wages he's getting is basically zero, everybody would like to probably get him off the books. And this is just the perfect excuse for, you know, the fans really get right on his back if they weren't there already. Whether or not the club can actually do anything, I don't know. As I say, it's very unprofessional. We had a wee text chat about it earlier. You know, we were just saying it's technically not doing anything illegal. I know his you know, his girlfriend or whoever she is was pictured with a bag of a white powder substance, you know, so again, that's not to suggest that he was involved in any of that in any way. You know, who knows though, I'm just saying it's, if he's cutting about in that, in those circles, who knows what it's up to, but I don't know, it's nothing, this is really nothing. If for example, Murrow can, I think if anything, Murrow will probably negotiate something with him to pay him off slightly. I don't think we'd both flat out sack him, and I don't think he'll flat out want to leave because, as you say, you know, he's getting paid for doing nothing really. Probably not through his own fault. I know he's been injured quite a fair bit, and he's got a bad injury just now. He's needing an operation on, but it's I don't know to be honest. It doesn't really mean much to me, but it doesn't change anything. For example, how would people feel if it was Louis Moult, for example, that had been snapped in that? I know that's all hypothetical and stuff, but I'm just saying everybody's jumping on his back. They're now saying sack him, get rid of him, because they want rid of him anyway, because we're getting zero return for him. But again, it could be the excuse the fans want and maybe the club needs, but I don't know actually what they can or what they will do.
It's a difficult one, Jay, isn't it? Because I think what's this point there, what happens if it was Lou Moult? My issue is that you would think a guy that has barely kicked a ball in the season and a bit that he's been at the club, when you've picked up another bad injury that's going to rule you out over a period of time, the best idea surely is to get your head down and work hard on getting back and certainly try and escape headlines like this, because whether it's certainly attention that the club don't want thrust upon them. He's not making any headlines on the pitch, but he's making headlines for the club off the pitch, which isn't ideal. And as I say, I don't think the story itself is a massive deal. I certainly don't think it's front page of a national newspaper on a scale anywhere near that. But I suppose the fact of the matter is it is there, and it's something that the club are going to need to deal with. They've already said they'll deal with it internally. It's certainly not reflecting well on him, and it's certainly not enhancing his chances of coming back and being welcomed with open arms when he does so.
Well, I think Buster's got it spot on. I think that I think you'll be hard pushed to find any Motherwell fan who wants Jacob Leif to remain at the club. You know, from what he has offered on the park, has been very, very little. He's looked massively out of his depth on the park. He's not a young player, you know, he's only about 3 months younger than Louis Moult, so, you know, the argument isn't that there's potential there to be fulfilled. He's essentially as good as you would imagine he's going to be, and yet he's offered absolutely nothing on the park. He does have a lot of injury problems. We know he's going to be out for, you know, about 4 months and needs an operation, or I'm not sure if he's had the operation or not, but, you know, it's a serious injury he's got. And I think, you know, the fact that by all accounts he's on a fairly decent wage for a Motherwell player, you're right to suggest that could be used for, you know, far more beneficial, be it topping up wages of current players or bringing in somebody else. I think we would be far better placed to use that for something else other than paying for a player that offers absolutely nothing to us. That said, all he's actually guilty of is going on holiday with his girlfriend and doing something that's not illegal. That's essentially all he's done. It just so happens that, you know, you mentioned about the son, you know, that's what they kind of strive off of. He's not front page news because he's a Motherwell player. It's front page news because it's someone from Geordie Shore that's in it. He just happens to be, you know, the sidekick or the kind of the supporting actor in it. So unfortunately, it puts the club in a bad light. Of course it does. You could argue it brings the club into disrepute. If the club have a code of conduct or a set of standards they expect from their players, it could be argued that he's went against that, and so the club might be well within their means to fine him or, you know, some other disciplinary measure. But I really struggle to see if, you know, the club would be in a position to get rid of him on the basis of it, because he's not actually done anything illegal. It's as simple as that. And if, you know, I know Buster mentioned the white powder that his girlfriend, you know, was supposedly snorting. If that was coke, then, you know, it doesn't really matter. Jacob Blyth was there, but as far as I'm aware, you know, there was no evidence that he was tanning lines of it. So I don't really see where, you know, I think it's easy. You know, it's an emotional reaction because everybody wants rid of him, essentially, as harsh as it may sound. Everybody wants him off the wage bill. He is just taking up a wage that could be so much better, so well, you know, far better used, perhaps bringing in another centre half or another striker. And I think we would all love if Jacob Blyth was able to just leave and carry on his career somewhere else. So the natural reaction is to pounce on this and say, great, let's get rid of him. And I did it myself. You know, we were talking about it earlier and I was thinking, right, maybe this is the excuse. But we also need to respect the fact that if you expect your players to be professional, then the club needs to be professional as well. And I just don't think there's anything professional about, you know, trying to get rid of him in the back of this, because he has done absolutely nothing wrong. You know, in the eyes of the law, he's done absolutely nothing wrong. Unprofessional, perhaps. You know, it has brought the club into disrepute and they will handle it. But I think, you know, calling for him to be chucked out of the club, as much as that would be, I think, very beneficial for Motherwell, and I think it's something we would all like to see, I just can't see how it can be possibly done on the back of this, unless there's more to come. You know, we know how scummy the Sun are, so they're probably already going through his bins and things like that. So we'll see if there's more to come from it. But at the moment, I just don't see as though, I don't think there's any way this can result in Jacob Blyth leaving the club.
I don't think there's any danger he'll have even any food wrappers. I think he just eats in Nando's all day. they'll not find much in his bins. The last player then to discuss is Louis Moult, who we didn't expect to see at all yesterday, but he comes on and doesn't only just come on, he scores a fantastic free kick to further enhance his reputation and the attention that's been thrust upon him. I think it's fairly surprising that we sit here on the 16th of July and Louis Moult's still here, considering how we thought that the summer was going to go and the incredible amount of attention that we expected Louis Moult to get. But I suppose with the initial interest from Rangers and then a week or so of speculation but nothing concrete linking him with Aberdeen, there's not really been any indication of a firm offer, Jay, and while that's quite surprising, I suppose we can't be too disappointed by it, because it still means that Louis Moult continues to play for Motherwell, and as he demonstrated yesterday, he's going to continue to try and do that to the best of his ability when given the opportunity.
Well, that's that. I mean, you're right to say that I don't think anybody expected to see him on the park on Saturday. In fact, going by his interview on the Motherwell YouTube channel during the week, I think the last thing Louis Moult expected was to be on the park in any form on Saturday. He certainly didn't seem to, as much as he sounded as though he wanted to be, I think he seemed resigned to the fact that it was still going to be a week or two before he'd be back. So it was great for him to come on, and obviously, you know, he had a great impact with a fantastic free kick. I think you're right. I think everybody kind of assumed that, you know, come the end of the season, as soon as the transfer window opened, the floodgates would open and bids would fly in. I think a lot of people have been left a little surprised by the lack of interest. Rangers, yep, sniffing about, but they're just not prepared to pay anywhere near the required money. I think Aberdeen are probably in that group as well. I think that, you know, the amount of money that we'll be demanding for Louis Moult, I think it will be out with Aberdeen's you know, price range. But I think as the summer goes on, interest will build in him, because there will be clubs down south who will have a list of targets. And just because Louis Moult isn't at the top of that list just now doesn't mean he won't be at the top of the list in a couple of weeks. Even look at Aberdeen, Louis Moult wasn't their top target either. You know, it was Boyce and then Stevie May. And it's only when those have fallen through that they've then came for Louis Moult. And I think that's when you'll see interest maybe start to build in them. Maybe clubs down in League One or the Championship down in England who are, you know, going for their top targets. And then if they can't get them, then Louis Moult will come into the, you know, the thought process. And, you know, there might be clubs down in England as well who are currently quite happy with their strikers, and then one of their strikers moves on and suddenly Louis Moult becomes a target. So I certainly don't think, you know, I don't think it's a case of if Aberdeen don't stump up the cash, Louis Moult will be a Motherwell player next year. I fully expect more interest to be generated as the transfer window goes on. But whether there is a club prepared to come in and pay the kind of money that we're looking for him, you know, remains to be seen. At the end of the day, if we can get over, what, 700k, I think, with 1 year left in his deal, given that we brought him in to sell him, if we can get, you know, north of 700k with some add-ons, whether it's to Aberdeen or someone else, I think the club would be mental not to take that money, and I fully expect he'll leave in that circumstance. And I think it would be sad to see him go, because he's a hero. You just need to see the reaction that he got when he came onto the park yesterday. He's got a great rapport with the fans, so it would be sad to see him go, just the same way as it's been sad to see, you know, a lot of players who have had, you know, great connections with the fans in the past. It's what happens, then you move on, and you move on with quite a lot of money out of it. So he's either going to leave for a decent amount of money that we can be happy with, or he's going to stay, which I think we'll also be happy with. So it's not something I'm particularly bothered about. You know, I think that both outcomes are going to be positive for Motherwell. It's just a question of what one it is.
And it's nice to see a firmer approach in the transfer market as well. There has been what have been described as derisory offers from Rangers and from Aberdeen. There was also a bid from Hearts for Chris Cadden of £100,000, which is laughable, to be perfectly honest, particularly when you consider that Motherwell would be due a development fee should Cadden leave at the end of his contract for nothing. That would be, I think, five or six times the amount that Hearts have offered there. So it's pretty embarrassing stuff from them. But it is good to see a firmer approach. We're not going to let our assets go for peanuts. And that's a kind of reassuring thing to know, that the club are clearly in a better footing financially to be able to be more hard and to negotiate a better deal.
Yep, and it's also, you're right, it's very good, you know, to see that we're not just going to be, you know, trodden all over, basically. It's also good to see, you know, you've heard Stevie Robinson say a few times, you know, that was a laughable offer they've put in, they've not offered enough or whatever, and it doesn't meet our expectations. So the club are being very public with the fact that, you know, they've got a set mind and price. You know, when they make their offers, they maybe even say to them, "This is what we want," and then their teams are maybe not coming back for them. Fair play to that as well. But as Jay says, with the Louis Moult thing, you know, I posted it on one of the websites during the week or whatever. There, I think our Louis Moult has no intention of signing a contract extension. In my opinion, he's you know, he's came here. He's done what he's done. He's been fantastic. Even, you know, in the way he speaks in his interviews and that as well, he's saying, you know, 3 years ago I was playing part-time. He told me I was doing this. I wouldn't have expected it. He knows that come even January, he can leave for nothing. And, you know, he can sign a decent contract with somebody, probably on two or three times his wages he's on just now. So I don't think he's got any intention of signing the contract that we've put in front of him. And again, that's upsetting. You know, I've had a wee sort of kid on moan about it with yous, but it's fair play, it's upsetting, but as I say, he came here for, you know, whatever it was, 30, 50 grand, whatever it was, done a job for us, been fantastic. I think if he comes in, you know, well, he actually came in already, to be fair, yesterday, the other Saturday, you know, he comes on in these games, scores a couple of goals, he's fit enough for the games against Rangers, you know, Hearts and things like that coming up to the end of the transfer window. That's when, as Jay says, there's going to be teams who might not get their first targets, might realise what they've got up front is lacking something. That's when they might become looking for players who they can pick up on the relative cheap side of things, especially if it's an English club. You know, 500k, 700k to an English club, it's nothing. You know, even going far down is probably League One. 500k to them is nothing. Buttons. So hopefully if that's the case, Murrow will have to look at, you know, who they could possibly bring in. They have to think about whether or not it's worth bringing somebody in, if they are thinking of moving them on before the transfer window, if they, you know, if the sort of the hype does build up and there is talk of bids and things, they have to maybe gamble on bringing somebody in before they get rid of them. Because again, I said this as well last season when we got rid of Johnson, you know, the last day or whatever it was of the transfer window, left us very short in time and in, you know, people in the park. Basically, we didn't have time to replace him in there, so we were left short in the left wing all season until January. And you know, that was probably that, and you know, McHugh being injured as well, that probably made us a wee bit worse than we probably should have been. So it's, you know, just to sort of round it up there, I don't know if I don't know if William will be a Murrow player for this season. If he is, again, fair enough. It's maybe worth, his goals are maybe worth, you know, 500, 700, a million pound to us over the course of a season, staying in the Premier League. So if he leaves on nothing, come, you know, next May or whatever, as long as he scores 20 goals again, I think everybody will be happy. But as Jay says, I sort of expect, you know, there to be a few late bids come, you know, the end of August, and I think he'll probably go at that point.
Guys, that seems like a decent point to wrap it up for this week. We'll regroup again after the Morton game. Thanks for bearing with me during my ramblings here, because with a broken or fractured jaw, it's very difficult to speak for this length of time. Well, hopefully by next week it'll be a wee bit easier. Thank you very much again, though.
Cheers.
No problem, thanks.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. Save me from tomorrow, save me from tomorrow.